Yeah, move it forward a bit. That's a good idea. Okay, so Om Ganatimadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Maha. So I thought this morning, I got a lot of things to talk about, but I thought this morning we'd speak about the demons. So, as we know, when Krishna appears, of course, Krishna, Ram, they're non-different. Parichranaya sadunam vinashaya chadushkutam. He comes to annihilate the miscreants, establish religious principles, protect the devotees. So Lord Ram, of course, is no exception. And Lord Ram, his main demon he killed was the Ravana demon, along with Ravana's family members, some of Ravana's family members. But there's actually another purpose behind the Lord's advent, actually several other purposes. One other purpose that comes to mind is that the Lord likes to have a good time fighting, and he has his devotees come down to fight with him, just like Ravan and Kumbhakarna, that was Jaya and Vijay, so he had a good time fighting. Because the Lord has the same desires that we have, because we get our desires from the Lord. And so the Lord likes to fight sometimes, and the Lord likes to have loving exchanges sometimes. Just like some of you may be getting married in the future, right, KB? So this is all imitation of the Lord. Just like the Sita Swayamvara. Actually, Swayamvara means, basically, she chose her own. That's actually Swayamvara, means to choose your own. So anyway, so Sita Swayamvara, such romantic things. And the interesting thing about Lord Rama's pastimes, just a side note, is that he differentiated himself from the other kings and emperors at that time because he only accepted one wife, right? One wife, Eka Patni Vrata. So, of course, nowadays people are accepting so many wives. They have what's called serial polygamy, right? Yeah. You understand? They have one after the other. But it's better to accept them all at the same time. And the interesting thing is, in Sanskrit, if you examine the word for co-wife, does anyone know the Sanskrit word for co-wife? No. It's saputni. Saputni. Sa Patni. I think you have Patni is also in Hindi. Sa means with. So there's two wives, you know, at least two wives. And it's interesting that if you examine that word, it's very Patni is very similar to Patna in Sanskrit, which means enemy. So Sapatni, Sapatna. Anyway, with one's enemy. So generally, when there's more than one wife, it creates a little bit of problems in the family. Just like even in Ram's pastimes, you find Kaikeyi is causing some problems. And Chitraketu's pastimes, Chitraketu had 10 million wives, caused a lot of problems. His wives killed most of the wives, that's 9,999,999. They killed the one kid, you know, Harsha Ashoka. So, generally, you find problems like that when there's more than one wife. So, Lord Ram, he was more intelligent. He accepted one wife. And he was so chaste and faithful to that one wife, Sita Devi, that even when she went to the forest, then he kept a deity of her with him. Can you imagine such a faithful husband? Any of you who are married, would your husband keep a deity? After you pass away, or let's say if you go on vacation, you go to New Zealand or something like that, would your husband actually keep like a little deity of you next to him? I don't think so. No, when the wife's away, the husband will play, as they say. So this is actually quite remarkable that Lord Ram was actually so devoted to Sita Devi, and Sita Devi was devoted. This is a story of love, actually. You know, people talk about love stories, but this is real love, because the love in the material world is simply based upon one person pleasing another person. You understand? You scratch my back, I scratch your back. And so it's not really love. It's just exploitation, mutual exploitation. But the love between Sita and Ram cannot be understood by us. I mean, all the things that Sita Devi did was, they were all out of love for Ram. Even, you know, sometimes people talk about this pastime when Sita Devi entered the earth at the end. You know that story? When Lord Ram said, you know, you have to prove your chastity again, you know. And she said, well, this is too much, right? And then she called for Mother Earth, and Mother Earth came, you know, the earth split open, right? And then Mother Earth came and said, my daughter, let's go away, you know, this is too much for you. And so they took Sita Devi away, and Lord Ram was bereft. But so one may think, oh, why did Sita Devi do that? If she actually loved Lord Ram, she should have just, like, tolerated, you know, isn't it? Some people say that. Is that a cat? What? No, there's a cat back there, too. I hear a cat. It's one of your cats, right? So, no, that I understand. That's just pressure, but that's a cat back there. So the reason I analyze this, the reason Sita Devi did this was because that was the only way that she could show she was actually chaste. I mean, people wouldn't have believed her. So this was actually to establish, to help Lord Ram, she did that. Because your cat keeps crying. You hear it? So because when she asked for her mother to come, that actually proved that she was chaste. That Lord Ram was actually ideal. So it was done out of service to Lord Ram. Not simply, like most people think, was done because she was just frustrated, you know, that Ram was just abusing her the whole time, making her prove her chastity, but it wasn't. That's a misunderstanding people have. Actually, the movie portrays it like that. You know, that Ramayana movie portrays it like that. But Sita Devi was just, anything she did was to serve Lord Ram. It's like the gopis. You know, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace, you may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. Whatever you do, unconditionally I will serve you, right? Boy, that cat is enthusiastic. You should bring it in and keep it on your lap or something. Like that. You don't think that's a good idea? Not during class. So, and actually, it's a fact. We all have that loving propensity. If we don't give it to Lord Ram, then we have to give it to Cat. So, anyway, so they're the ideal married couple, ideal, you know, romantic couple. This is real romance. You know, and if you hear about the story of Lord Ram and Sita Devi, then all these different stories that you hear about in the Bollywood movies and things like that, because, like, garbage, isn't it? Like, simply garbage. So anyway, that's really the most important reason they appeared, is to show this ideal love. And to attract us, the conditioned souls, because the story of the Ramayana has actually been told for hundreds of millions of years. Because Lord Ram appeared in the Treta Yuga. The Ramayana story occurred then. And actually it was an oral tradition up until the time of about when there was written language, which is like the beginning of Kali Yuga. Before that, people had good brains. And so the oral tradition was written down about, you know, I guess about 5,000 years ago. And that's why we have the present-day Valmiki Ramayana. But previously, it was oral tradition. Sometimes the Indologists or people criticize, oh, the Ramayana is only like, you know, 4,000 years old or something like that. But actually, that's when it was written, not the age of the Ramayana. The age of the Ramayana, it's actually aged less. Because even before Lord Ram appeared, there was knowledge about Sita and Ram. We told this story the other day, that there was that deity that was given to Vivaswan, Ikshvaku, Manu, the deity is of Sita and Ram, and it was passed down through the Surya dynasty. And Lord Ram was given that deity, And Lord Ram didn't want to worship himself because he was prideless. Normally, if we're given the deity of ourselves, we worship it, isn't it? Like, we become very happy if we see a picture of ourselves, isn't it? You're going through an album, like your photographic album, and you go, that's me! Did you ever do that? Hey, look, that's me! That's me in Vrindavan. Vrindavan's not so important, but me is. That's me at the Taj Mahal. That's me in Radha Kund. Like that, you're looking through your album. But Lord Ram didn't want to worship himself, so he gave that deity eventually. I'm not going to tell the whole story we told the other day. He gave that deity to a Brahmana who had taken a vow not to eat until he had seen Lord Ram that day. So that Brahmin was fasting a whole bunch, so that helped the Brahmin eat. So the Brahmin didn't lose weight anymore. And then the Brahmana, he gave it to Hanuman when the Brahmana went back to Godhead, because all the residents of Ayodhya went back to Godhead when they entered the Sarayu River when Lord Ram went to the spiritual world. And then Hanuman, he gave it to Madhva Acharya, the great Acharya in our disciplic succession. And that deity, or those deities, are still there today in Udupi. You can go see the deities of Sita and Ram, the original deities of Sita and Ram. So anyways, the point is that the pastimes of Sita and Ram are Nitya Lila. They're not just something that occurred millions of years ago in Treta Yuga, but they occurred before that, and before that. And they're occurring today in some universe. Like Prabhupada said, the pastimes of the Lord are a routine spool. Just like you have different movies, you may have gone to see some movie, and that movie is playing in so many different theaters simultaneously, isn't it? It's not that I went to the movie, and after I saw the movie was over and was never played again. That'd be kind of stupid. It's played again and again. Anyway, so it's Nitya Lila. So the main purpose is so the Lord can exhibit his pastime so we can be attracted, so we can get out of this mature world, so we can understand what real love is. Rather than thinking this Bollywood, I don't want to use any bad words, the Bollywood garbage is love. Okay? Everybody understands that? Okay. So, with that in mind, I'd like to talk about the demons. Especially our friend Ravana. So, getting back to the demon story, the demons, actually, they were called Rakshasas then, which basically means cannibal. You know, man-eaters. They would eat people. Anything they would eat, practically speaking. Just like nowadays, people are not eating people anymore, grown people, but sometimes they eat fetuses. I don't know if you know that. Sometimes they even make perfume out of fetuses. So it's practically Rakshasa civilization. So they were descendants of Pulascha. And especially you had this Ravana, his brother Kumbhakarna, his beautiful sister, you remember her name? Surpanakha, which means long nails, like that, just long. Surpanakha. Naka means nails. It means like long, like curved nails. Like tiger nails. No, not even tiger nails, it's even longer than that. She's beautiful. Like the ladies nowadays, they like to put extra nails on their nails. You ever seen that? They get these things that they glue on or paste on. I've never done it, so I don't know how to do it. But one time I was sitting in an airplane, and I was sitting next to a lady. She was getting ready. The airplane was landing. She was putting her nails on in front of me. And I said, I better get out of here before it gets dangerous. So Surpanakha, she had long nails. Ravana, he was called Dasa Griva. He had 10 heads and 20 arms. You wouldn't want to get in a wrestling match with him. And then you had Kumbhakarna, who was so big that he was threatening. There was a food scarcity because he was threatening to eat all the food in the universe, you know. And so, you know, everybody was nervous about him. And, of course, you had Vibhishan, who was the pious one of the lot. The rest were just, like, really challenged individuals, problematic individuals. So they were all performing austerities in order to get benedictions. And Ravana, He was actually performing austerities, like cutting off his heads and offering them. It's an interesting thing. Just like recently, there was someone who was worshiping Lord Shiva. Two people in India during Shivaratri. Maybe you heard the story. They jumped in the fire, thinking that Lord Shiva would appear. He didn't appear. They just died from burns. So don't think that Lord Shiva, don't jump in the fire thinking Lord Shiva will appear. It's not that easy. Even though he's Ashutosh. So anyway, Ravana was offering his heads, and they were all engaged in austerities. So Lord Brahma appeared, and Ravana, he said, yeah, like the demons, they normally want immortality. I mean, that's the basic thing. Because if you can't be killed, then you can actually get away with anything. You can outlive anybody. So anyway, so Lord Brahma said, you know, can't really give you immortality, but you can choose, you know, you can choose other things. And we like we know Hiranyakashipu, he said, I'm not going to be killed in the daytime or nighttime or by man or by beast or inside or outside. And so he thought he had all of his bases covered, so to speak. But actually, you know, there was a loophole. You know, like, sometimes you make a contract and there's a fine print. So there's always a loophole in a contract. So in this particular contract with Hiranyakashipu, you know, it was Lord Nrisimhadeva. He was neither man or beast, and it was in a doorway, which was neither inside or outside. It was the twilight, neither day or night. So in the case of Ravana, Ravana was thinking, all right, just make an arrangement that I'm not, you know, I can't be killed by demigods, Gandharvas, these higher living entities, you know, mystic yogis, brahmanas, like that. And so Lord Brahma said, okay, no problem. But he didn't include men or beasts, you know, or animals, because he was thinking, you know, they're just so puny. It's just like someone saying, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I'm not worried about ants. That was Ravana's relationship to us. You know, just little ants. Just like throughout the whole Ramayana. He wasn't even concerned about Ram up until the last minute. He just think, who is this Ram? Even when his associates would sometimes glorify Ram, they would say, you know, Sri Ram. Even if they used the word Sri, he got really angry. He said, don't use that word Sri in front of me. He's just a puny little ant. You know, don't glorify him. So anyway, so Ravana, he just asked for that benediction, and Lord Brahma said yes. And then Kumbhakarna, he actually wanted the benediction of having the throne of Indra. Yeah, I think you all know that story. He wanted to be in charge of all the heavenly planets. But everyone was worried about him, you know, eating. His eating habits were the real problem. You know, if he became Indra, he'd probably eat the whole universe. So therefore, Saraswati, the goddess of learning, resided on his tongue and caused him to mispronounce words. And he said, instead of Indra, Asara, he said, Nidra Asara. And Lord Brahma said, okay, you can sleep. No problem. And so Ravana said, you know, this is not proper. How can you do this to my brother? My poor brother, he's been executing austerities. He's a religious man, at least from a particular perspective. He's a religious man. How can you do this to him? Just, you know, do something. And Lord Brahma said, all right, every 6 months he can wake up. And then he go back to sleep again, only one day every 6 months. That way he won't eat so much. You know, that's like every 6 months, you know, like 180 days, about 182, 183 days. And so that's one 183rd of the amount he would eat before. That's a lot less. So that was happening. And then Vibhishan, of course, he asked for piety and always remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after that, Ravana became very enthusiastic. You know, now no one could kill me, I'm immortal, etc., 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 like that. Previously, he had achieved this Pushpaka Vimana from his brother Kuvera. Pushpaka Vimana is like the flower airplane. Ravana had many vehicles. Not only the Pushpaka Vimana, he had his general vehicle. You know, we went to kidnap Sita Devi, was not the Pushpaka Vimana. It was a chariot pulled by asses with human heads. Can you imagine that? They're like, you know what an ass is? You know, like a donkey. and a human head donkey. And that was the chariot. Pretty ferocious chariot. Anyway, that chariot was later demolished, actually, by Jatayu. And so Ravana, when he flew back to Lanka, he actually carried Sita like this. Many think, you know, I don't know how, oh yeah, the film depicts a chariot, but actually that's not the way it was. It was actually, the chariot was completely destroyed, and the asses were killed, or the human asses, whatever you want to call them, were killed. So Ravana actually carried Sita back like that. He flew through the air on his own mystic power. So Ravana had that chariot. He also had the chariot of Pushpaka Vimana. He had many different vehicles. Just like a rich man, he not only has one car, he has many cars in his garage. So Ravana had many chariots in his garage. And many wives, too. He used to go around kidnapping, like, young girls. Because it solved the marriage problem with getting young girls married. You don't have to worry about it. Oh, Ravana. And, you know, no paying for the marriage is pretty cheap. Doesn't it save money? Yeah. We should arrange that. So Ravana would just kidnap the girls, and the father would say, boy, that's a relief. You know, I don't have to worry about her marriage. But the girls actually loved Ravana because it was a handsome chap. He wasn't just some ugly demon. The only time he looked a little ugly was when he got angry. Then the 10 heads would come out. You know, normally if there wasn't any problem, he would just manifest one head. But the only time he would manifest 10 heads, several times, one time is when he would get angry, and so all the 10 heads would come out and go, rawr. Another time when he wanted to have a business meeting. You know, because each head had a specific specialty. One head was expert in Niti Shastra, and the other head was expert in the Vedic rituals. Another head was, you know, lusty head. So each head had some, you know, it's not that they were all the same. Each head another head was expert in planning battles. So they would have a conference, like we have our GBC conferences. So his GBC was all of his heads, you know, just talking. What do you think about this? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Please tell me how to do it. And the other head over there. Okay, here's how you do it. Anyway, so the head, therefore he was called Dasagrivat. That means ten-headed one. So, I mean, Ravana was quite an interesting character. So, after he got... another thing about kidnapping the ladies was that one time he attacked Ramba, who was the wife of Nalakuvara, who we know from the story of the Damodar story, and he forcibly had a relationship with her. You know, he raped her. And then he was cursed by Nalakuvara that next time you do that, you die. So after that, Ravana only accepted girls who really wanted to happen. And actually practically everyone did because he was handsome. He wasn't just, you know, he wasn't ugly. He actually had marks, battle marks on his chest, like he had the scar or the hole where Airavata, Indra's elephant, pierced him. And so he was, you know, he was just like a tattoo, I guess, or something like that. So all the girls would fall in love with him. Wow, I got kidnapped by Ravana, wow. And so he had like a harem. You know what a harem is? That means many, many girls. Had a harem in his palace, and in the night they'd all get drunk together. And when Hanuman was looking for Sita Devi, he was going through this harem. And he was a brahmachari. Usually brahmacharis don't go in the women's ashram. But Hanuman was taking this little form and he was flying around and he was praying to Ram. He said, Ram, don't let me get attracted to these ladies. Because they were all beautiful ladies. And they're all lying there, you know, intoxicated, some, you know, clothes half off and everything like that. And he was looking, is that Sita Devi? No, it couldn't be Sita Devi. Sita Devi doesn't drink alcohol. It could be. Even he saw Mandodari, who was Ravana's wife, and he thought, yeah, this is going to be Sita Devi. Sita Devi would never be here with Ravana. So, anyway, so Ravana, he became very proud. You know, all these wives, Pushpaka Vimana, not being killed by anybody who he is afraid of. So he did several things that actually interfered with his happiness. One is that he became so proud, thinking, you know, I'm going to teach Lord Shiva a lesson. And so he went with his Pushpaka Vimana to see Lord Shiva, Mount Kailash. And so as he was going to Mount Kailash, the Pushpaka Vimana wouldn't move anymore because it was getting too close to Mount Kailash. You know, Lord Shiva's more powerful. And it landed, and then he got off, and he saw this strange-looking person. It was Nandi, who was actually the bull of Lord Shiva. Nandi had looked a little bit like a monkey. And so he started to laugh at Nandi, "You ugly creature." And then he got cursed by Nandi, "You're going to die because of a monkey." So there's many curses that Ravana had to endure. So then he proceeded. He didn't worry about this, you know, monkey. What's a monkey, you know? Just like you see the monkeys in Govardhan or Vrindavan. They're not too frightening. Little monkeys, unless you happen to be a small person. They're not like gorillas. So anyways, all they do is steal your glasses and take your prasadam away from you. So then he went further, and he saw that Lord Shiva was on top of Mount Kailash, so he thought, well, let me show everybody my strength. He picked up Mount Kailash, and Mount Kailash started to, you know, tilt a little bit, and Parvati was on Mount Kailash with Lord Shiva at that time, as she usually is, and she got scared, and she embraced Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva just put his toe down, and putting his toe down, he sort of crushed the 20 arms of Ravana. So Ravana was trapped there. And he didn't, you know, he couldn't do anything. He was just trapped there. And it lasted for something like 100 years, Ravana was trapped. The only way he got out was that he began to sing songs glorifying Lord Shiva. Some people say he uses intestines as like a vena. There's some story like that. But Parvati also cursed him. Parvati cursed him that your death will be caused by a woman. So she got really angry with him. So, I mean, there's all these curses that Ravana had to endure. Then, actually, he started a fight with Anarya. What was his name? Anaranya, who was actually the forefather of Dasarath. He attacked Ayodhya. He actually attacked Ayodhya. And Anaranya came and fought with him, and he killed Anaranya, the forefather of Dasarath, and of course Ramchandra too. And Anaranya cursed him, "You're going to be killed by one of my descendants." So he had another curse to endure. So he had, you know, Nalakuvara's curse, he had Durga's curse, he has Anaranya's curse, he had Nandi's curse. You know, he really was piling up his curses there. Then, Nandabraj. Now we have to talk about Vrindavan now that you're here. We were just talking about Ravana. He's actually quite an interesting chap. So then there was another curse. He saw this lady, her name was Vedavati. And she was meditating on top of the mountain. She wanted to have Lord Narayan as her husband. She wouldn't be satisfied with anyone else. So he was flying in his flower airplane, his Pushpaka Vimana. He landed and he said, "Oh, hello. Hello, beautiful." And he saw that she didn't have any, you know, red dot on the forehead, so she wasn't married. And eventually he made his approach to her. You know, he wasn't really shy about approaching women. He grabbed her hair, and she made her hand like a knife or something like that, cut the hair. And then she entered into this mystic fire. And she said, "I'm going to take birth again in your kingdom, and I'm going to be the cause of your death." So it's interesting that Sita Devi originally appeared in Ravana's kingdom. Did you know that? She appeared in a golden lotus flower in Ravana's kingdom. And Ravana thought, uh-oh, this is the girl. So he just told he told his men to throw her in the ocean. You know, that's how you usually got rid of women. You didn't, you know.
Flower, what did you find?
Yeah, lotus flower.
Lotus flower.
Golden lotus flower.
What was the origin of that?
From the heavenly planets or from spiritual worlds. She was in golden lotus flower. He found her floating in golden lotus flower. And then he said, "You just throw her in the ocean, you know, kill her, you know, throw her in the ocean." So they threw her in the ocean, and then Varuna carried her, gave her to, you know, Bhumi, the earth goddess, and then she went under the earth. She put her in a little container, and later on she was discovered by her father. You know, while they were plowing the field, that's why she's called Sita. Sita, you know, she came out of the ground. So, and actually there's a whole history. Wow. Anyway, we don't need to tell that history now. But the dynasty in which she appeared. But in any case, so she cursed Ravana, and then she was born in Ravana's kingdom, and she was ultimately actually the cause of Ravana's death. So these are some of the stories, you know, preceding the appearance of Lord Ram, or preceding about the demons, actually, which are interesting stories. I don't know, how long do we have? I guess that's about it as far as the time factor is concerned, because people have to get to work. Any questions about these things? Tonight we'll tell more stories. I got all these stories about Lord Ram's birth that are really interesting. The stories about Rishi Sringa and everything like that. The sage with the horn on his head. Any questions or comments? Or arguments?
Some people say, I heard it later on, but they said when Ravana accepted Sita, that was not the real Sita.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, Prabhupada talks about that story too. Prabhupada says that, and actually it's there in the Puranas too, that Sita Devi, this is actually quite an interesting story. This involves something in the future too. Let me see if I remember the future story. Yeah, so Sita Devi actually was taken by Agni and kept safe by Agni, the fire god. And then she was replaced by Maya Sita. That means her Chaya, Maya, reflection Sita. And so Ravana didn't actually capture Sita Devi. And later on, when the Maya Sita entered into the fire, then actually Agni returned her. But there's some story later on where Maya Sita actually gets the chance, not in Ram's pastimes, but in some future incarnation, Maya Sita actually marries the Supreme Personality of Godhead later on, because she was actually wanted to marry him. And there's some story in this together, right? That's what I'm trying to remember. But, you know, because she actually was there as the substitute for the real Sita, but she still fell in love with Ram, so she wanted to marry Ram in the future, in some future incarnation. I'll have to remember that story, maybe tonight I'll remember.
Because she was so powerful that no one could touch her.
Yeah, yeah. It said, Prabhupada said, if anyone had touched the real Sita, they would die immediately. So that wouldn't have been so good, because Ram actually wanted to exhibit his prowess. You know, if you had Sita Devi kill Ravana, that wouldn't have been so nice. And all the women would take that example and be too tough. You don't want the women to be nice and soft and everything like that, not to go around killing people. So anyway, so that's the story. Very interesting story. What other story? No, there's only one Hanuman. He disappears whenever there's Lord, and he expands himself like that. You know, he's a Nityasiddha devotee. Oh yeah, there's one other story I want to tell about Janaka that precedes this whole story. Of course, Janaka is a very interesting personality. Actually, all the kings in Maitila were called Janaka. He wasn't the first Janaka. There was Janaka the first, just like you have in the UK, isn't it? Like Elizabeth the first, Elizabeth the second. Henry the Eighth, you know Henry the Eighth. So that means there were seven Henrys before him, even though he married eight ladies. But anyway, so Janaka. It's interesting. The original king in that dynasty was called King Nemi. And King Nemi, he had a problem with his spiritual master. His spiritual master was Vasishtha Muni, and anyway, King Nemi wanted to perform a nice sacrifice, you know, something for Krishna. And he said to his spiritual master, I want to do the sacrifice. And his spiritual master said, okay, but wait till I come back from performing the sacrifice for the demigods. The story's in the Bhagavatam, actually. And King Nimi was thinking, I'm not going to wait till my guru comes back. You know, human life is too short. And I can't waste time. So he began to do this devotional sacrifice when his guru was away with the demigods. And he also was thinking, my guru is away with the demigods because they give bigger donations than I do. So, you know, demigods are actually richer than human beings. So when his guru came back, Vasishtamuni came back, his guru saw that he had performed the sacrifice without him. And his guru got very angry with him. And you don't want to get your guru angry with you. Not only because it's an offense on chanting, but because he may curse you to die. So so this particular case, Vasishtamuni cursed King Nimi to die. It's actually, the word is nirdeha. That means to be without a body. So King Nimi just died. And they actually preserved his body in oil. That's how they would do sometimes. Well, because they were still performing the sacrifice. And so, as King Nimi was dying, he also cursed Vasishtamuni to die. So, Gurudev, you died too. So he was so powerful that the guru also died. And Vasishtamuni later appeared from the semen of Mitra and Varuna. Anyways, the whole story about that. And so King Nimi was kept in this oil, and after the sacrifice was over, the demigods appeared, and they said, what do you want? And the brahmanas said, we want King Nimi brought back to life. King Nimi said, no, I don't want to be brought back to life. I want to go back to Godhead. I've had enough of this stupid world where your guru curses you, you know. You know, what am I going to do? You know, how am I going to take up spiritual life if my guru keeps cursing me? So anyway, he went back to Godhead. So the sages were thinking, what are we going to do with the body now? And how are we going to come up with the next king? Because at that time, they usually picked the kings based on genetics. So they wanted to preserve the genes of King Nimi. So what they did is they churned the body of King Nimi, and out came Janaka I. That's why it's called Matila, or Mitila, which means the churning. You understand? Hindi, it means the same thing?
Yeah, Mata.
Mata. Yeah, same thing. Same, very similar. Mata. Matila. So it's just like churning, because they churn the body, you know. And out came Janaka I. And that's why the kingdom got his name. And then Janaka I had his son. He was named Janaka II, then Janaka III, and all the way to Janaka, the father of Sita Devi. And Janaka, the father of Sita Devi, is considered one of the Mahajanas, one of the great souls, you know, who set the example of religious principles, and a great personality. So, any other questions about the Ramayana? I mean, tonight we'll tell more stories, some interesting stories about the birth of Lord Ram. Traditionally, on Ramayana recitals, you do the birth in the morning, you do the marriage in the midday, and in the evening, you do the fighting and the return to Ayodhya. That's the evening. So that's how it's usually done when you're doing a whole day of Ramayana recitals. But this evening, because we're not doing the whole day of Ramayana recitals, we'll do the birth this evening. Any questions? Comments?
Yeah.
Because there was a Brahmin who was really upset, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented him with the Puranas showing that it was actually Maya Sita that was kidnapped, not the real Sita. But I'm trying to remember where that story is, that Maya Sita also wanted to marry Ram, and then later on in a future incarnation of God, she got a chance to marry him. This slips my mind right now. But she was actually also in love with Ram.
After in the South Indian literature, Guru Maharaji, the Kamban Ramayana, there is a South Indian classical dance based on Maya Sita.
Mm. That's nice. Yep, Maya Sita. And of course, another thing Prabhupada says about Sita and Maya Sita, he says if you don't have Ram and you just worship Lakshmi, who is Sita Devi, you get Maya Sita. And he said Maya Sita is Durga. And Durga has the threefold miseries of adhyatmic, adibodhic, and adidaivic. So in other words, instead of getting people worship Lakshmi without Narayan, they just get trouble. They don't actually get Lakshmi. Okay? No other questions or comments? No? So I'm fasting the whole day today until the evening because I'm observing Ram Nomi today. You all don't have to do that. You can use your computer and figure out which day to fast. You can be more sophisticated than me. But today, on this day, Rama appeared in India, in Ayodhya. And actually, there's that whole controversy about Ayodhya. It's interesting. People in India love Ram so much that it caused, that whole controversy in Ayodhya caused the demise of one modern government in India. Do you know the story? That the government would not allow them to rebuild a temple in Ayodhya, you know, after the mosque was torn down. And then that government was voted out of office. Because everyone loves Brahm. Even when the Ramayana was playing on the TV, all the shops closed. Everything stopped. You know, you could drive through the streets, there wasn't any traffic or anything, which is amazing for India. And even the Muslims were watching. The Muslims, the Jains, everybody would just watch the Ramayana, be starstruck, you know, just watching Lord Ram's pastimes. Isn't it? Most important.
There's controversy still going on.
What's that?
Controversy about the Ayodhya.
Yeah, it's still going on, yeah. Well, they have it completely surrounded by guards, so no one can go near it. But the thing is, the Muslims, what they would do is they would always erect mosques on holy places of other religions. They did this in Jerusalem, too, in the Dome of the Rock. I mean, it's the main temple in Jerusalem. They actually erected a mosque, and they said that's where Muhammad ascended to heaven from. So they always come up with a story and a mosque. Whenever they find a... Yeah, Mathura too.
A big one.
Big mosque. And actually, if you want to go into the Krishna Janmashtami in Mathura, I mean, you have to practically take everything out of your pockets. Probably you have to give up your watch, your camera, your glasses almost. I mean, it's heavier security than the airport, isn't it? I mean, it's because the mosque is right there. So there's this whole thing that the Muslims do. Whenever they find a holy place with another religion, they just build a mosque there. Maybe we should do that with temples.
the reason being, Guru Maharaj, is that because all the temples were very heavily loaded with jewels and gold coins.
They use that, and also the British Empire used that too. The crown jewels in the UK actually come, you know, from India, from the deities.
The deities.
I mean, actually, you go see in Buckingham Palace the jewels the queen wears and everything like that. That's from the deities. Hellish, isn't it? They should return it.
They did put that Kaisar, but what they said that we have been safekeeping that for so long, the cost of keeping it.
Then you have to pay us back for the cost of keeping it. So the cost of keeping it is the same cost as the jewels. So we have to keep the jewels unless you give us back money. That's pretty crazy, isn't it? We took your money, but the cost of keeping your money is more than the cost of the money, so you have to pay us more than the cost of the money if you want your money back. That's like a bank, isn't it? The banks do that too. They have their charge. They're actually increasing their charges now every month, isn't it? You look at your account and you have like $1,000 in the account, it's $500 service charge for the month. Not that much, but they actually... You know, the account reconciliation fee. I mean, you work in a bank, isn't it?
Actually, up to 500.
Really? And then I mean, it's really amazing how they're cheating. And then every time you make a withdrawal or make a deposit, you got to pay a fee on that. And then if you want to take a mortgage out, you got to take mortgage insurance from them, which costs you, you know, half the amount of the loan anyway. It's really cheating. Yeah, they're trying to make money. But that's one of the reasons we're in the situation we are now. It's because of the banks, what they have done. Primarily because of the banks.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Today you were talking about how you can incorporate Krishna
Yeah.
And, I mean, in my...
Not today, yesterday I was talking about
yesterday,
that. That's right.
That's
right.
But it is down to our discretion whether we want to give it or not.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and at times people are, oh, this person died or this person.
But not really true. They just want to.
We know it's not true. But
yeah.
Well,
maybe you should open up a liquor store and give the profit to Krishna. And allow them to purchase only at your store. What do you think? That happened in Fiji. Anyways. You just give them a credit card, only works at your store. I mean, you have your job to perform. And obviously that's your professional duty. And you can't, I mean, obviously if you let your religious inclinations interfere with your discretion and job, it's going to cause you problems, right?
Yeah, but then how can you at the same time tell, look, you know
that... I'm not saying that you're going to preach to them,
yeah.
But you're going to actually develop a sense of compassion. Why is someone drinking? You tell me. You don't know? Yeah, but why generally are they drinking? I know that.
They're probably having a hard time.
Yeah, they're having a hard time. I mean, people drink generally for several reasons. One reason is that's the only place that they can meet friends. You know, the bar, that's for men. You know, men or women who are looking for love or something, I guess. So there's different reasons people drink. You know, people go to the bar. One is that, you know, that's the men's male bonding type of thing, you know. At least in, I don't know if it's here, but at least in Europe it's quite prominent like that. You know, so the men get together. I mean, what else are they going to do when they get together? Then, you know, because they don't chant Hare Krishna. So they go to the bar, and then on the TV screen there's the sport games played. Is that right? They have that here too? And so, you know, you got to drink something, and you know, you got to feel comfortable. You got to get rid of the anxieties. So they're basically drinking for several reasons. One is that they want friendship, which means they're lonely. Because if you're not lonely, you're not going to need to do that. And another one is because they're depressed, and they want to drown their sorrows. That's a big one with alcoholics.
Mm-hmm.
They want to drown their sorrows. So if you just look at it, it's actually misery that's causing them to drink. I mean, if someone is really happy with life, they're not going to be drinking. You know, just like if someone really like is so happy running around, jai, haribo, you know, what do you have to drink? It just dulls you. I mean, if I think of drinking, because I never drank before, I mean, even the only time I ever took a sip of liquor was during a religious ceremony. And I'm not talking about at the Mandali, but it was at, you know, the religion I was born in, when you're 13 years old, there's like this whole ceremony, and everybody gets drunk. I didn't get drunk, but they gave me, he said, now you are a man, you know, this is a coming of age ceremony, now you can drink liquor. So I took a sip, and I went, it burned my throat. So I said, that's it, and that's about it for me and liquor my whole life, so... So, anyway, so when I think of liquor, I think of something that, like, really dulls you, so your mind isn't sharp anymore. I mean, I'd like to have a sharp mind so I can think of Krishna, so I can think of philosophy. You know, so I like to use my mind. I don't like to just, like, huh? Like, that's not pleasant for me. So, in other words, if someone is actually enjoying life, that won't be pleasant for them, right? I mean... But if they're in anxiety, they may do it. Or if they're not enjoying life, or they're in depression. Yeah, sure. So then you can develop compassion for them. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
This person is in anxiety. In other words, why you drinking, you're thinking in your mind, why you drinking, and you develop compassion for them, and that helps you in their Krishna consciousness. The person's suffering. Even when I see someone in love, I think they're suffering. Because happiness in the mode of passion is what? Does anyone know happiness in the mode of passion? No one knows. No one knows Gita here? Anyone ever study that book? It was written by Krishna 5,000 years ago. So the Gita says, happiness in the mode of passion, in the beginning is like, and the end is like, blank. Fill in the blanks. Yeah, that's right, you got it. So we got one Bhagavad Gita scholar here. It's like, so I'm looking at these people thinking, you know, they're just, you know, in love, dancing around in a circle, or whatever. And then, they don't know what they're in for. So, actually, most violence occurs in the home. Did you know that? It's actually more dangerous to come home and say, hello, dear, than it is to go out in a dangerous area of the city. Statistically, I'm saying. I'm not. Yeah. That's true, isn't it? Most violence is domestic violence. So that's proof of that, you know. I'm not saying that people shouldn't get married, right? It's too dangerous. That would, I mean, definitely that would be a sannyas class, which is not appropriate to give, not appropriate to give today. But anyway, that would, that class I would give to the brahmacharis. But but anyway, so but the point is that trying to enjoy something, you become angry. And Krishna, of course, says that in the Gita. He says, "Jayate bhishek pumsam sangosteshu bhajayate sangatsan jayate kama kama krodha bhajayate." From contemplating sense objects, one becomes attached. From attachment comes lust. From lust comes anger, right? I think you all know that verse. So when I see people in this world, I just see how they're suffering and they're trying to alleviate their suffering. And that's it. And when I see that, I develop compassion. You understand? So why do they want the money to get liquor or whatever? Because they're suffering. If they weren't suffering, they wouldn't need liquor, right? So I just feel like compassion for them. So that helps us in our Krishna consciousness. That illustrates what I was saying. Instead of passing judgment, oh, this rascal. See, what you do probably is they say, this idiot, this rascal, this demon, this jerk, this jackass. You know, you probably think, are you thinking things like that? Because they're getting licked. You know, oh. And you actually develop like an animosity towards the person because they're using it for the wrong purposes, the money for the wrong purposes. But instead you just think, oh, this poor person's suffering. And I have to give him money so he can suffer more. That's a pretty bad job to have, isn't it? Anyway, you have to do your job. You can't say, you can't start preaching to people. You know, someone says, I want overdraft because I want money to get drunk. And you say, you know, this is not proper. You got to follow the four regulated principles. Have you chanted your rounds today? You know? Yeah, anyway, you're doing a job. You got to do what you got to do. What can be done? So, I think we have to end now, right? Because people have to go to work. And tonight we see everybody at the Ramayan, and today for me is a fast day, which is actually a blessing, especially when I come here to New Zealand.